Oh, should we put this in there?
Not a few. On Amazon, because we've had people tell us, oh, I can't afford it.
$89. Yeah. Right. Amazon is down here 45.
Who made that? That's
there
nice.
You go.
That's nice. Who made that?
Howard?
That's my strength. I'm wondering if I should run and get that thing. I'm not recording this one.
Well, better run.
We'll save your
seat.
We've
got a recording here.
I can get a recording. I'm not going to run in the back.
These guys are recording.
Yeah. All right, they're also.
Paul, have you and John confirmed that the audio comes across clear?
The audio comes through this. I don't know if he's had a chance to listen to what he's taking. Find out. I've uploaded, I'm in the process of uploading them some to YouTube right now.
And they sound good, right?
Well, they sound fine.
Great.
Given the cheap system.
Yeah. But that's the most frustrating thing when you go to YouTube and then you can't really
the
hear
audio
it.
Is so bad.
Yeah.
That's just, it's okay.
Good.
I got one already. But I am, I know yesterday I had stuff to do for work and also things to do this morning. I had to get out of the way for the week. So I have time today and tomorrow.
We're going to get started in a moment if you'd like to take your seat. So welcome everybody. Welcome to the Climate Change and Money session. My name is Bo-Young Lim and I'm with the American Monetary Institute. We are a public charity that was founded back in 1996 by a man named Steven Zarlenka, who is also the author of this great book, The Lost Science of Money. It's a historical account of the history of money over the years, and there's a lot of really good learnings there. This group has been doing a lot of thinking about monetary reform, and in this session, we want to bring two worlds together, basically. How many people here are involved in the environment, movement, climate activism, agriculture, anything nature-related? Hands up. Okay, so you can look around, a lot of hands. How many people are familiar with monetary reform? And I'd ask none of the A-minus people, put their hands up, but have you heard about monetary reform in your circles? Okay, great. So what we're going to do is, Howard is going to do a presentation giving you an overview of those two different worlds. We're going to have a short panel where we will have some additional comments, and then we're hoping that we'll have a Q&A at the end so that we can have some dialogue. I'll just say before Howard starts that we're in a very unique time in human history. Some people within our circles have framed it as being one where kind of headed for a cliff. And times are requiring a lot of revolutionary changes to transform society in the ways that we want, because to not do anything would really mean the end of the human species. So there's a lot at stake. How I would like to frame it is that it's actually a unique opportunity for people all over the world to really come together in an unprecedented way, to come and unify, think together and collaborate and work together to create a society that works for everybody. And part of what we want to try to do is marry the environment piece and the money piece in such a way that we can figure out how to work together so that we can be more effective in the work that we do. So without further ado, let me introduce Howard. He's a trained architect. He has lived on a intentional farming community for over 10 years and has dedicated a lot of years to monetary reform. He's also a great singer. So, Howard.
All right. Hi, everyone. Thank you. I am very honored to be here. My credentials are probably, I'm a hippie that reads a lot. I live in the woods. I don't have too many people above me. I came to AMI, I came to monetary reform, just to tell you a little bit about myself, after living for 10 years on a collective community, which you may know of as the farm. And, louder, thank you, Jamie, thank you very much. I need to project because this is theater, after all, right?
Very good.
And so I'll do my best to keep the volume up, and if it drops, just let me know, or if I drop, you know. Anyway, don't want to waste too much time on that story, but I came to off the farm and moved to Nashville with my family, and I was up there trying to figure out what to do, and got involved with some people, so we put together a Peace and Justice Center, and saw all these groups coming together and thought, man, there should be a way we pull all that together, you know, what are we going to do, you know, well, we'll put the Peace and Justice Center together, and we'll rent space to everybody, and that way it'll kind of put everybody together, you know, and, you know, it kind of put everybody together, but not really, you know. From there we thought, well, it's really a political issue, and we need to get into a political issue to kind of pull things together somehow, you know. And so, there's the Green Party. It's got all the values that we care about. It's got all this platform that we care about. And at the time there wasn't the key element in it, but it got there. And we tried to pull things together there too, and so that effort's still underway, of course. But I was looking for the root. This is hacking for the root, right? And so I was looking for the root, and so I did a presentation on complementary currencies. And it was all that I had read about currencies, all the books that I had read, and I just shared it with the Green Party one year, right at the annual meeting. And when I got home, there was a call from Steven Zarlinga on the phone. He says, Howard, why don't you come on up to the conference? I'll waive the fee and you can sit on a forum and speak your piece, tell us what you think of our conference. I was so honored. I couldn't believe it. So I did that. And that opened up my head to what he was talking about in 12 years of research that led to the NEDAC. So I thought, well, considerable accomplishment, wouldn't you think, if you had your issue and you had a bill and a couple of sponsors in the legislature already. I was amazed at the depth of work and thinking that went into this. Anyway, we're going to talk about climate too, and if I can get the technology to work, it's been a little sticky. Oh, picture of book, we already got that. The quote underneath.
Whatever.
The title of the book. The Lost Science of Money.
And the quote.
The quote at the bottom.
And
the
this is going to be a long
session. Give it 30 seconds.
You didn't touch anything.
Now, wait a minute. I didn't even touch anything.
He's the one that I saw.
Oh.
You're going to get a lot more than that.
Incredible participation.
Oh, no. Do you want me to hold it down for you?
You gotta do something. You gotta get it off on the mat.
Hopefully. Yeah. Just, you know, when you're just too slow, I think you're not going to get pushing the button. Just what I wanted to tell you was, I want to talk about this in a general way, because, and Buckminster Fuller once told us, if whole systems behavior is not predicted by just looking at the parts. You got to look at the system. You got to back up and look at the system. We got to understand that what we're talking about when we talk about monetary reform, we're talking about the system. Now, Gar, I think, mentioned people come and go, but the system continues. So we're talking about changing the system, and we know what the system is. We've identified the part, the pieces that we need to change, and we're going to talk about those things. Anyway, I was going to just mention that and not from that slide, but from another slide of a picture of our lovely planet.
There you go.
And just say that that planet is a system, right? It's a big system. It's a living system. That's what makes it so remarkable in our solar system.
Going back one more.
And that's why we call it Gaia, right? From Lovelock, you know. He was analyzing the chemistry. He was a chemist of the atmospheres of the planets. And Earth didn't compute because it was going to burn up or something. Chemically, it wasn't right. There was something different about it. It was living. It was a living system. And so it was circular. And the nice thing about this system is that it creates everything that we are, everything we breathe, everything we eat. Yeah, right? Everything. Everything. All our bone, everything. All that comes from Earth. And if we... And it does it all without making waste.
And no waste.
And we make the waste.
No, we make waste.
But it doesn't make any. It recycles everything. And it does it while maintaining full employment, too, because it has lots of recyclers doing it. Right? And it does it all at ambient temperatures. They aren't burning oil to do all that stuff. Right?
Tell me next, though.
We're pretty good. Oh, yes.
You have to move it. Oh.
And so I was going to keep it general because I can't predict the behavior of whole systems looking at it separately. And that's because I don't want to go down rabbit holes. There's details on all these things. For instance, I might show a picture of a personality and you'll say, oh, that slave fucker. You know, wait, don't do that. Don't go there, because everybody has a light side and a dark side. I'm looking at the light side. And, you know, we know the dark side, and it's very dark indeed. And we're wanting to bring on the light. Okay, so we're just looking at the light side. Climate change and money. Climate is a system. It's part of the whole system. And money is a system. It's our operating system, it's our whole system, it's the economy, it's the global economy. The money system is a global system, okay? And we're gonna hack at the root, come on. And, wrong way.
She's going back.
Oh,
she's
going back.
Oh, no. Yeah, go the other way entirely.
Eight or nine, get on the ninth slab.
One more.
Oh, yeah. We're planning, right? That's why we're here. We care about our planet, so we need an economic system that cares. But this system doesn't care.
No.
And we'll talk about how and why.
A little louder, Howard.
Oh, we'll talk about how and why. And this is a kind of a diagram I made of our systems. Human systems, right? We got our oil system, our energy system. We've got our agricultural manufacturing. And debt over here, I don't know what happened to the teeth, but anyway, it shows you, it's the fattest, and I'll explain why in a minute, because we're familiar, excuse me, I need a drink, but we're familiar with this system being extractive and linear. I mean, we take the stuff, we use the stuff, and the waste just goes everywhere and anywhere, all for money. All for making money.
Gotta talk like a preacher, Howard.
Yeah.
We had that this morning.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. I really need a mic. This crowd way down there.
Amen.
Way over there.
Amen.
We're familiar with this. So it's all about money, right? A lot of this stuff I'm sure you all know. But look, our agricultural system is too. It does the same thing. It's just an extractive linear system. It doesn't return. And we can change that because we already have the technology for it. Same way here. Manufacturing, same way. We're getting into what we call, you know, biomimicry, right? That's an effort to turn manufacturing into a cyclical system. But we've got linear systems. It's all making money. Now, why is this one fatter? Well, guess what? You do not dig a hole for oil. You do not plant a field. You do not manufacture anything without borrowing money from these guys. Okay? This is the financial system. And it's all about money, too. It's all about concentrating wealth. And on the other end of that, you know, of course, if you're concentrating wealth on one end, what's happening on the other end?
Ouch.
Poverty. We don't want that.
A near-death experience.
We want productive cyclical systems, right? And that's what we're talking about, because we need energy systems that are cyclical. They do not pollute. They do not create waste. They work for us. And I'll show you one in a minute. Agricultural systems, we already know how to do that. Regenerative farming does that. We also know some other tech things that we can do, considering that it's an agricultural thing and we need much more employment in that area, and I'll show you how we can get that too. If you follow the NEED Act at all, we've got, you know, it'll create millions of jobs because we'll have the money to do that. And that's about the money system. It needs to be productive and cyclical. It can't be linear going to the 1%. It needs to be constant, a permanent money system that continues to circulate through all these systems and make that work. I think Jamie had made that circle once in one of the earlier ones on monetary reform. And so throughout this, I want you to think about leverage points. Now, in systems, they talk about leverage points because that's a place within a system, a complex system, where a small shift in one thing can create enormous changes in everything in that system. And so we're talking about the economic system, and we're looking for a small change too. And it's really basically just a bookkeeping change, and it would change the ownership of our money from private to public. And those are the two monetary paradigms that exist in the world. And the one has been dominant. You can go to the next slide. One has been dominant, and one has debt. Money as debt has been dominant in this world from the beginning of civilization. Money has tried to emerge in the Greek revolutions. Rome used it for a while when it was a republic. And the Bradbury pound and the American Revolution, it has been trying to emerge. And it's time it has to emerge because we're in trouble. And we're in trouble on a global level, and it's a global system that's causing that trouble. And it's this global system. We'll talk about that some more. Here's the distribution of wealth, right? I'm an architect. That is an anemic structure. That structure is not going to work. This beanstalk here is going to snap off. And the first wind that comes along, you know, that's dangerous. And of course it does. It does a crash, but the wealth stays there. We'll show you how they pull that off. Okay. Here's the ideal. In a public money system, we would, instead of having the economics of greed, which is what that other graph represents, this graph is the economics of care. Now, this is done from a survey. They said 92% of people wanted this. I thought, well, that's
a much better distribution of wealth in society. And imagine what it is, because remember in that little section down here, at 80% or so of people, 90%, that's where all the art and innovation happens. That's where it all happens. And this is a parasitic thing happening here that's creating this concentration of wealth. Well, what is that? It's a system. And history is the science of the human experiment. That is what I learned from Stephen Darlinga and Jamie Walton and other AMI folks, because without history, you don't have science. You wouldn't know about climate change if we didn't know about history. Right? We all know that. So it's the science of the human experiment. So let's look at the history. The Fertile Crescent. How fertile is it today?
Desert.
Right. Did you know that North Africa used to be forests?
Forests.
North Africa was forests. It was taken down by the Romans.
Romans, right.
Shipped off for hypocaust. Land cleared and used for growing wheat until it couldn't supply the nutrients for wheat anymore. Wow. And that's the process that went on here. And of course, in the process of that, these groups started warring with one another, one taking over the other and getting bigger. The other taking over another and getting bigger, then the two big ones just getting at each other, and one of them gets really big. And so we get this, right? We got Mesopotamia. And that's when power with gave way to power over. This was a point when civilization had begun and it concentrated wealth, because those who had more power. And that concentrated until these guys got in power and said, wait a minute, we've got a female goddess out there and we don't like that. We're the gods, we're the king. We're in charge. And so they changed the system and got rid of the Earth Mother and changed it over to a male god. Powerful male god.
Thunderbolt.
Yes. This is the god of thunder. And look at all the people bowing down there, right? And the golden rule changed. You know, instead of sharing, it was who has the gold. We've heard that joke. It was true. And that's also when women became property of men. They said, we got rid of the goddess and changed. Now, again, this is general. There's a lot of detail we can look at. But this is what happened, basically, is women became property of men. And it changed the dynamic from the tribal culture that everybody had evolved out of that was egalitarian. Next. And they created big cities and religions and powerful economic systems. And cities are concentrations of people, thus a concentration of waste. And if you're not taking that waste and circulating it with your food production system and, you know, taking care of the environment around you, but that's not how they work. They deforested areas and denuded it and planted large amounts of wheat. It was the whole thing was this grain farming thing that they discovered would make them wealthy. So they did all this farming, and they would, at first, they would lend you the seed. And they learned that better to say, lend you the money. All right, because they can set the value of the money. So they would lend the farmers money to buy the seed. But when the farmers came to sell the seed, the money wasn't worth as much. And so the whole people that were selling the money as debt got wealthy. And that's how they created these big cities. That's how they got all of this massive amount of wealth and power. And they run into problems every once in a while and had to have a jubilee. not out of any social, you know, concern for people, because the system stopped because everybody was too in debt and couldn't go on anymore, so they'd have a jubilee so that they could keep issuing money as debt. They were an imperialist war economy too. That's the model that civilization has followed. I mean, so America had the same problem. Just that last civilization, it collapsed because of climate change. It had caused drought because it had denuded the landscape and changed the climate. And the same thing happened in Mesoamerica. They did the same thing. That's why they collapsed. It was an extended drought because they had done deforestation and monoculture farming, massive monoculture farming. All that bread. And were there revolts along the way to today? Yeah, lots of them I mentioned, right? One was in Athens. And there they revolted against the rule of the wealthiest, which is what that was all about, right? The wealthiest people. Those with the gold ruled. And they established their own government so that they could issue their own money. And their own money instead of gold, which is what the wealthy wanted, and sold them. They wanted worthless money. They wanted a material that just represented the money by law, because it was their new government. And they wanted to issue this money to the household so they could spend it into the environment for all the goods and services that everybody provided. They made it out of cold spearheads, and they dipped them in vinegar and made them brittle. Heated them up, dipped them in vinegar, made them so that they were worthless as a commodity. And they called this what? We know, right? They called this democracy. That's what it was. So money was at the foundation of democracy. That's what it was about. Everybody says, you know, there's money in politics. I'm surprised. Yes, that's what it's about. It's about the money. It's about who rules the money system. And today we have a private, global group of 20 banks and more, a whole system. And that's the thing about systems. The people come and go and the system remains. So that's what we're up against, is a system. And it's got lots of cogs of people in it. They're just doing their job within that system, because if they don't, they get replaced. The system replaces them because it's somebody else's job to do that. So it's a big system. And so that's what we got to dismantle and rebuild our own, right? Our own system. And that's all about the money. And money is created by law. I mentioned that, right? So when people say, oh, it's fiat money, I say, yeah, because all money is fiat money. If it's not by law, what is it? It's not money, it's a commodity of some sort. How did it get to be money? It has to be an agreement, and that agreement is based in law. That's how money, that's how the natives who use seashells, for instance, for money, within an economy, Africa. Throughout Africa, they had trade lines, right? And they traded. And they had a money. It was cowrie shells. And that money was just an agreement among everybody to use what? A cowrie shell for a certain amount of value. Okay, that's money. All right, let's see, what else? Oh, it's silver. That's what happened to the Greeks. They changed over to, started using using silver for their money. Oh, let's make it shiny. We're prosperous today, right? Great, so let's make it out of silver. And the oligarchy got control of the money. Okay, because they went to precious metals. Next. And of course, another challenge we're more familiar with, the American Revolution, as Franklin said, that's why we had the revolution, was because they made the outlawed the money, sent the nation into a deep depression. People still wanted the money, and some of them were still making the money, and some of them got hanged for making the money, and now we got a revolution because there was huge unemployment. As Franklin said, the streets were full of unemployment. And so So they moved, they, with their own currency, financed a revolution, the Continentals. And the only reason the Continentals ever, oh, getting into detail, never mind. Don't want to go to any details. We can talk about that later. Next slide. And they created a constitution because they won the revolution, right? They won the revolution, created a constitution. And it's the purpose of the constitution in the first sentence. It's a preamble. Now we can speak a lot about the negatives of the constitution, of course. But it does say establish justice. Has that been done yet? I don't think so. Ensure domestic tranquility.
Not too bad.
Really? Promote the general welfare. That's a big one.
Yeah.
What about that? What about those others too? Yeah, that'd be nice. Happiness, somebody said. Yeah, what about happiness? That's not in there anymore. All right, but we got a constitution that said that, so that's a point we can say, we want this. We want this. You know, this other stuff, I don't know, that's details. That's where the devil is, never mind. We want this. And we want it because inside the Constitution here at Article 1, Section 8, we have the power within this government to create the money that we need for it. They don't have to borrow it. Right now they borrow it and pay interest on it. It is created under their authority, their own authority. They've given their authority to create it away. For some reason. I think it was sacks of gold originally. Today it's a little more sophisticated, right?
Gold sacks. Yeah, sacks of gold.
Yeah, sacks of gold, right? You're familiar with that. Yeah, okay, good. And but it was as Salvador Allende's revolution, as he's pointed out, we run the revolution. But we didn't win the power. They didn't win the power. And why was that? It was a power struggle. It was a power struggle. Now, like I said, there was images that were going to bring up all these other frames. Don't go there. Just remember, there was this power struggle between these two guys, right? And one guy represented money, which was government funding everything. The other guy said, no, wait a minute, we want to do it kind of like Bank of England. They do it so cool. They do Bank of England, man, they just lend the money out, you know, for interest, and they get back all this money, and they create a whole industrial society that way. And we could do that, and it'd be great. And Jefferson said, no, man, no. Oh no, people need to live out here on the farm, you know. They need to spread out around this lovely countryside and grow their food and be happy. And he believed in something called usufruct. That's a legal concept that means all humans have a right to the fruits of the land as long as they don't degrade it or destroy it, no matter who says they own it. Well, now that was kind of convenient for people that was in the middle of a genocide. But still, it's a pretty good concept, right? You know, so the light and dark. Let's look at the light, okay? And then usury. Well, now I'm not sure there's a light side to usury, I'm afraid. Sorry. You know, Dante put the usurers at the bottom. But dig this about these two guys. He was a farmer. He was a banker. We know who won, right? Okay.
Who are they?
He got shot.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh man, that is so good. Thank you.
Everybody,
that was Hamilton over here, who was a banker.
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
I got a whole musical about him. I wonder about him.
Yeah, I wonder why they're
great guy
about Jefferson.
He doesn't have a musical about him.
He wrote Congress for years and years trying to get him to switch the system. Anyway, Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton. And so let's look at the systems, the two systems, right? Two paradigms. One is money issued as a debt, issued by private concerns for personal gain. And for government, for us, that's a cost. That's money out of our pocket. We either have to tax it or we have to borrow it. What are we going to do? And it has to be paid back with interest on top of that. Oh, how's that fair? Wait a minute. They create. We give them the power to create the money, and then we borrow it, and then we pay interest plus that money. What's going on? Why are we doing that? And then we have a public asset money system. Now that's what we're talking about, is a public money system that has been trying to emerge for a long time. And that's where it's not a matter of money anymore. Cost, money is just a symbol that represents materials and labor. You know, it's just something to move that around. It's to facilitate the economy, the exchange. It's an exchange medium, right? And so cost is not a matter of money anymore. It's a matter of resources. Do we have the labor and materials to do what it is we want to do? If we do, yeah, let's issue the money, whatever it takes, to do that. We got the power to do that, right? That's what the Constitution says. And that's how it should work. You should just figure out what you need to do. If you got the labor and materials, you issue that kind of money. Why do you do that? Because you want to avoid inflation. You don't want to just issue money willy-nilly, right? And dig that. That's a resource-based economy, right? When you're spending resources, not money, you've kind of changed over to a resource-based economy. You've heard, probably heard that term before. And I run into a group that was all about that, and they except they eschewed money totally and wouldn't talk about it. Thought, well, I wonder how they manage that. Anyway, there'll be some kind of money because money's just an agreement. You know, the dollar, that's just currency. The coin, that's just currency. The money is the agreement in law. And so this is interesting too. You all seen the Princeton study? Have you all seen that? And this is where they analyzed, they interviewed a bunch of elites to find out their, you know, to reveal some things, you know. But what they figured out too was there was, out of 200 companies, the most politically active companies, $5.8 billion was invested in congressmen. Yes. Yes. And they got back $4 trillion. Yeah. Okay, and over this 10-year period. Okay. My calculation was that's a 700 or 670% ROI, you know, return on investment. Other figures was more, I don't know. Anyway, money is power. But dig this, it's six companies, right? Our six areas of industry, right? So each of these represents a bunch of corporations. But look, pharmaceutical, energy, defense, communications, agribusiness, they're all investing a bunch, right? But remember, they were in debt to these guys. Look how much these guys just put in. They put in a bit more. They can afford it. They can just create money. They can just create money. You wonder how they can do these ridiculously huge projects. They can create money.
Where did you get the 5.8? It's not a total of the other ones.
5.8 is what they invested. 4 trillion is what they got back.
No, but he says the totals up there are not the same as 5.8.
Oh. Yeah, there was, is it more or less? I never watched that.
A lot more than
5.8. Oh, they invest in each other.
Well, this was just a, I don't know.
Yeah,
if it was more than 5.8, I don't know.
It's closer to 15.
That's a detail, never mind. All right, it was more, it was less, I don't know.
That's economic.
But it was a bunch, we know that, right? We know it was a bunch.
It doesn't change.
A bunch is all in America.
I think he meant
the 5.8. All right.
Who's the lobbyists?
Now that 15, or maybe we don't have 15.
There was a string of them, you know there was. Nothing vast enters the life of mortals without a curse. Go on. Wow. Never stop the place, right? Wow. We've got a vast system.
Wow. Damn, that's a great line.
And there it is, you know, the web of debt right here. Anyway, it's kind of funny because, look, we got 20 connected corporations all around the world that control the monetary systems of every country in the world. Every country is participating in this, and there's a few that are rebelling, and you know who it is, number one. Iceland.
Yeah.
Right. Iceland. They arrested their
banks. They arrested the Rothschild. Yeah.
That's right. And so they've done research on public money, and they'd like to do it, but, you know, there's a big old roadblock, big old gorilla in the middle of the road. You know who that is, right? A bunch of them are up here. They call themselves the Fed. But, you know, they're really a bunch of American bank corporations, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, you know, all that stuff. So let's don't get into details. There's a bunch of banks controlling the system, the global monetary system, world around. Okay? Every dollar is debt. Okay, so what do they do with it? They centralize systems. They centralize systems so they can squeeze the money out of them, right? And that's why they take over farms, that's why they take over things. You know, 5 million farms lost since 1935, you know, and it's just bigger and bigger farms. Heard a guy talking about a farmer, farmed 7,000 acres, his family did. He said, you know, it was such a much better life when people could just make a living off of 80 acres, right? Mm-hmm. You know? There'd be a lot more people around here, you know? He's kind of missing community because the system drove him to doing that. It was either get out of farming or get big.
Get big and get out.
So what does that system do? It mines fertility, it poisons the soil, creates desertification. We all know that, right? Less nutritional food, soil dependent. It wastes water, it's less secure, causing climate change. We know that because we've been doing that for centuries. Now we're doing it on a big industrial scale, world around, aren't we proud? Anyway, is there a leverage point in there somewhere? I don't know. I really haven't thought about it, but please, be my guest.
That's go on.
Nita.
I think so. That's a good start. Debt for money. They centralize energy systems too, right? Same reason. Squeeze that for the dollar, right? Narrow the point of entry, so to speak, I guess. Yeah, efficiently ignoring resiliency. We need resiliency, otherwise we're...
Can't bounce back from that.
Can't bounce back, right. We need more than sustainability. We need, you know, I mean, sustainability, obviously we contain resiliency, really, it seems like. Anyway, leverage point? I don't know. Let's go on. Oh, and debt for money centralizes population, right? It destroys the local economies, and the population floods to the cities and creates these massive human disasters around cities. More pollution, more poverty, less security, more crime and suffering, all because the local economies were destroyed. They were driven off the land and into the cities. So the cultural cities just keep getting bigger and bigger. And I'll try and get my voice bigger and bigger. Part of what protects the system is the social management system. And we are all very familiar with the social management system because that's our school system and the media system combined, controlled by
corporations.
Money, the money system. Yeah, it's the money system. It's not some guy, it's the money system that's controlling those systems. It's a money system that demands you pay the debt and the interest. They're busy doing that. But in the meantime, I want you to do this for me. And I got the research from, what was his name, Freud's cousin or nephew?
Bernays.
Yeah, you know this stuff, right? So. They figured out how they were going to do mind control, and they was doing it in the media, and they started doing it in the schools with mandatory education, which we all know started around the same time the Fed happened, the private central bank. Now, there's, you know, it was quasi-federal in that it had a name that sounded sort of federal. But there are psychological consequences to this money. And that is what we see in our society. When we look at all the problems of people are off into these bizarre things, there are psychological consequences to usury in the society. This is, and this is research. There's a bunch of it out there. Just Google it. You'll find psychological consequences of money. And of course, when we talk about money, they're not talking about money. They're talking about money as debt. They're talking about usury. And all the religions of the world banned usury originally. And why is that? Nobody understands that because everybody thinks usury is just charging too much interest. It doesn't really have anything to do with interest necessarily. It's abuse of a monetary authority for personal gain. So, and they found that the mere presence of money changes people, that money can be a barrier to social intimacy. And they did an experiment I just have to tell you about because it was so much fun. They had two classrooms. They had one like this and they had another one. They had everybody taking an exam. And they had, you know, and it was a silly exam. It was just a bunch of funny questions, you know, and you know, head scratchers, right? And on the wall in one of the classrooms was a big picture of a dollar bill. The wall of another class was a big picture of counter shells. And so they just let them start doing their quiz and everything, and the researchers watched them through the window. What they discovered was the people that, with the dollar bill in their room, they kind of preferred to work alone, sat further apart from one another, hesitated to ask each other for help, responded to requests as if they were a little insensitive to others. And, but then they looked in the other room, there's people sitting around in a circle, and they're all laughing and carrying on and talking about this quiz that they're taking, you know. And they sat close together in a group and didn't hesitate to ask and were sensitive to others. And
just were laughing. Picture in the front of the room.
Right, well, just the picture in the room, that's all it was.
That's all it was.
And it's that powerful, and it's that kind of depth of psychological manipulation we've all been subject to. And you know who purchases the largest amount of psychological services? The school system. Okay? That's an interesting thought. But anyway, let's go to the next one. That's a detail. Seven more studies. There's all kinds of stuff that that causes. Let's go to another one.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Why are you in
there? I'm sorry. Are you writing all this stuff down?
No, I didn't.
To read it. All right.
One back.
Just
one
a minute. Thank
yeah.
you.
Well, all right.
Take a picture.
Rest your voice.
One of the ones that got me was number six. It affects wealthy people too. It affects their families. It's not good for them. It's a system.
Wow.
They are just part of the system. Do you ever see that film where a bunch of activists landed in the front yard of the CEO of Shell to confront him about the crimes in Nicaragua? Did you ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. They landed on this guy's front lawn, and the guy comes out, and he's like this friendly old grandfatherly guy. Yeah, what do you want? He was just doing his job in this corporation. Well, they said, you know, there's really ethical concerns, sir. You ought to think about that. But he really hadn't.
Yeah.
We need to reach people
mm-hmm.
where they are. And because it's not good for them either.
Yeah.
I love number four.
All right. And one of the things that from the research was, mere exposure to money can trigger unethical intentions and behavior. Unethical intentions and behavior.
Mm.
And Dante, I mentioned him earlier, he put him in the bottom of hell. So usurers, that's the worst thing you can do. That's the only thing that pissed Jesus off. That's what it was about. It was about the usury that they were paying. Not merchants. I mean, he didn't care about that. It was the usury that he was pissed about. And Dante called it an extraordinarily efficient form of violence by which you do the most danger with the least effort. What do they do for all this power and money?
Nothing.
It's a system. It does it automatically. Remember, it's not the people. There's beneficiaries up there. You know, there's eight guys that own half the world, right? We heard something like that, or is it five? Anyway, but you know, that's just the beneficiaries of the system. The system chooses that. They, you know, they just get rich. You know, and they could be nice people. Because it was their dad that was such an asshole. Anyway, and the values that, and of course, usury was a sin in every religion. And why? Because it was the progenitor of the seven deadly sins. It was the sin. It was the big mama sin. Big daddy sin. Yeah. Anyway, wrath, greed, sloth, all that stuff reflected in society, right? In unthinking society. This is thinking society, so I'm not talking about it. Maybe. I don't know. But the values that a monetary system is based on become the values of the society. The dominant values of the society. Not everybody. There's always escapees like us.
We're part of the rebellion. That's the empire.
Yeah.
It's not moving.
Oh, gee. So, usury, hacking at the root, maybe. We're talking about all these issues we care about. That's where the rubber hits the ground, that's where the pain is. So those are the issues we care about, and those issues are, if I may suggest, are the branch issues. Because they're the symptoms of the system. And we want to look at the root of the system, which is down there, kind of hidden, kind of kept mysterious, kind of considered the big shots. Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, they control the monetary system. Those are systems too. Each corporation is a system. It's a, you know, it's a system of subsystems. And those are those systems that we need to get to change if we're going to hack at the root. And how do we do that? We take their power away, and they just wither. Okay, and what's their power? To create money. All right, we know that, right? Okay, so let's talk about climate change. I want you to notice this is, you know, I got the problem here and the solution over here. Right? We need to reconnect and get cyclical with our environment, right? I think we all agree to that. And notice that the solution is smaller than the problem. Leverage points. Yeah, because the problem is huge. And the problem is about a parasitic relationship with our Earth. And because of the economic system. It's a parasitic, puts humans in a parasitic relationship with the Earth. We're preying on our Earth. We're not living with the systems of the Earth. And the solution is, of course, to create a symbiotic relationship with the Earth. Come on. And we've got technologies that can do that. But we've got this problem. It's, you know, chewing up systems that are natural systems that would help restore natural cycles. But we're taking it down with monoculture farming, the big climate changer in the world. At an industrial scale that's breathtaking and impacting communities that live off of that wealth. Stockholm Resilience says there are 9 planetary boundaries we cannot cross, and if we cross them all, we've lost it. And we've crossed 4 of them. so far. And two of them are core boundaries that cause big changes. They might be, you know, somewhat leverage points, right? All right. Bill Gates is spending millions of dollars on creating ships that go out and blow water into the air to create clouds. Fighting climate change, he says. I don't think so, Mr. Gates, because I got a better idea. Oh, no, not there. That is renewable energy systems, and of course, their products are the same extractive industrial system. However, you don't see fuel trucks or pipelines going to them to fuel these systems. So it's a good transitional technology for us. And we can do better. We know how to do, we're going to find out how to do better. As long as we can free up the money to do that, because right now banks aren't going to fund doing it where the energy is free, where there's so much energy. What's the point of, you know, spending money on it? Except to build the systems. And these two guys were doing that kind of stuff, and that's why they had their labs burned down, right? You know, because they had done some revolutionary stuff that was going to get out, and they go, whoa, wait a minute, burn that stuff down, burn their records, get them guys, you know, write bad stories about them. You know. And so we've got this problem with cycles that are earth-air cycles. Causing climate change. Oh, I'm getting time. I'm sorry. Let's move on. We got lots of cycles, right? We got the nitrogen cycle, another one, and the water gas cycle, right? And we don't, our soils aren't holding as much water as they used to. Why? Because we've taken the carbon out. And so we got the oxygen cycle. That's one that we should pay attention to. And because that was a big changer. And, you know, the first great extinction was because of oxygen. And we don't want the sixth great extinction to be that. And so we got the carbon problem of, you know, this interrupted cycle. And so the problem is, if you've got too much carbon in the air, it means you don't have enough carbon in the soil. If you have carbon in the soil on your planet, it feeds on CO2. It pulls it out of the air and feeds on it. What are we doing? We're taking the carbon out and not putting it back. And Marx was concerned about that. We'll tell you about that. But here we are, holistically managed land and conventionally managed land. And you can see how that's just a diagram of that. It's in permaculture, there's a term, it's called, let me say, if you got too many ticks, you just don't have enough chickens. You know, it's just the balance of the system. I love that. Anyway, the natives made soil. Terra preta soils are the most fertile soils on the planet, and they were human made. Because they figured out how to grow soil. Because all soil is the biology in there and the carbon in there where they can, you know, condominiums for the bacteria and all the microbes that live in the soil. And they figured out how they could feed the microbes in the soil and grow them. And of course they have to build more condominiums. So more carbon in the soil, and they built this wonderful fertile soil. And Elaine Ingham has been figuring out how to do that. Yeah, we can do that. Look, we take the compost pile and divide it up between these certain things, compost it down. It gets into all of these life forms, and we spread it on the soil. And guess what? That spray rig we saw? That was a nasty looking thing, but dig it. If it was spraying compost tea with these organisms in it, because they can go through a spray nozzle, we're building soil. We're growing it. And that's what you need to grow plants. Right now, we just feed the plant. We ignore the soil. We just feed the plant. With nitrogen and whatever the plant needs, but not the soil. All right, so how do we create a symbiotic relationship? We got to consult the genius of the place, and that's the soil. Because the soil is humus. That's where we came from. We are humus. All of the stuff that's in the soil is in us. Yeah. All the bacteria, all the little bugs. And how can we grow soil? Well, we can do what I just told you. We can grow soil and we can grow our food locally. And we can use a tenth of the water and grow 10 times the food. And be changing the soil dynamic at the same time. And providing healthier food at the same time. And we need investment in that. Here we have localized economies. We could do the same thing with our community. We need to get back out into the country. And here's an energy system. I was talking about a circular energy system. How do we do that? Well, we create systems that only use the waste of the system in front of it. So the waste from this system goes here. Oh, also some of the product, because this can produce waste heat. And we can use that for process heat here. And we can then recycle this stuff to here. Yeah, right? We can grow food. We got crops. They got livestock on that. Maybe you don't want to do a lot of livestock. Just do more crops. But dig this. You can clean your water with crops. And right now, they produce alcohol with corn. You can only get about 400 gallons an acre off of corn. You know, so it takes vast quantities to grow the amount that everybody wants, and we don't want it to be that way anyway. We want small systems, and this system will only work if it's small. This is village scale. This is farm scale. This is, you know, a small community scale system that can kind of be scaled up and down within a certain amount of limit. And here's a ruralization scheme that a fella came up with, where you take create these eco villages, right, that do all that stuff. And you got, he was putting it on about 500 acres and 200 people. So, you know, about 2.5 or 3 acres a person. And Frank Lloyd Wright once designed a thing called Broadacre City, and it was 1 acre a person. But it was integrating all our agriculture with where we live, plus cultural centers, shopping centers along the way. And they estimated that they could get the entire population along the interstate system in a 4-mile strip and leave the rest go wild.
Wow. Say, I think it's time for us to hear the other lady.
For the other lady?
Yeah.
Am I late?
Two people were scheduled, and we have 10 more minutes left.
All right. Sorry. Let's flip forward here to the very end. I was talking about how our mind is created. If you know that, we can talk about that later. And what happens when there's a crash. And the debt, and the NEED Act.
Hold on, that's the one.
That's the NEED Act.
Yeah, hold on.
That's also the Green Party platform on monetary reform.
We do have handouts on that. At our
yeah, we do have two on that. People to listen to.
Right, sorry, sure. Go on. All three reforms must be done. This is an explanation of that. Go on, yes, another one. We know. Okay, stop here. All right, well, I was wanting to get to this point. And that is that currently we're divided on many different issues. And that provides a very poor leverage point because we are so divided on the issues and they're held apart by who? Us. So what if, and so if we had a lever of monetary reform, there's not much political action there, right? But it could move the world as we've seen. All right. If we can make those issues our leverage point, and get on this lever with our political action, I believe we can move forward.
Just because of time, we only have about 10 minutes. I wonder if we can just open up the floor to questions that people may have specifically with respect to how monetary reform affects climate change. Are there any specific questions you'd like to ask? Yes.
Go back a couple of slides because I think that's what we really want, the specifics of what, yeah, that and the next one past that.
And the next one past that, right?
There, right?
Yeah, there.
Do the one before for just
yeah, so okay. That was it right there.
Yeah, but let us read it.
All right. We're supposed to look at it. This is what we can do.
Number one is the Fed becomes part of the government, what everybody believes. And the bank creation of money as debt is decisively stopped. and banks will be able to lend money that already exists, what already people already believe. And the federal government creates and spends into existence U.S. money as it's needed. Again, mistakenly, what people think is happening.
Money. The U.S. money is public money.
Public money.
Okay, right. Go on to the next slide. That's good.
The reason we have to do them all three at a time, the Bank of England's public, but they don't control the monetary authority. Those banks do. Jackson and Van Buren banned money and plunged the country into a deep depression because they didn't issue any money.
They stopped the bankers, but they didn't issue money.
Themselves, yeah, no, I got it.
Right. And then debt-free greenbacks were used to finance the Civil War. And the progressives, all in the late 19th century, everyone were hollering for more greenbacks to be issued into the economy. For roads and hospitals and all kinds of stuff. And but because he didn't ban the bankers from creating money, they got the upper hand again. So beware of those public-private, you know, those deals. It's a bad deal.
Yeah, because you talked about Bill Gates and had that ship that was shooting.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I thought it was some human relief.
Does anybody know anything about chemtrails and how it, in fact, I just recently heard that they really have to do more with part of the war machine. And
That's true.
It's going to be used for tactical purposes.
That's what I understand, but I don't study it much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Kucinich actually had presented the NEED Act to Congress in 2011. Also had written a preservation of space bill, where he lists banning chemtrails and several other things. I think that was in 2001, and then it was watered down in 2003. He used military documents, and you can go online and find it. Some of that stuff that they use for chemtrails is called chaff. It's military chaff, and they'll tell you on some of the military websites how many million pounds they issue that put into the air. They've also got people like, who's that Virgin Mobile guy, and academics, who say that we can control the climate by putting, you know, aerosols into the air, which is completely ridiculous because then it cuts off the sunlight to the earth and changes the pH balance of the soil. So there's a lot of that going.
We had a question or comment at the back. Yes?
Yeah, I was going to ask any one of you who know all about this, a couple of points. One, what's the difference between private debt and public debt in relationship to this? And then the other is, how does this intersect with the movement towards the public banking institute, state banks, and complementary currencies on a local level?
Obviously, if you had a public banking system, local currencies would be a whole lot easier to organize and might not even be necessary. But trying to organize them right now, as you know, takes a tremendous effort organizing a network to recognize it as a currency. When instead of, if government issues it, bang, it's a currency. I mean, it's money. That's because that's what it takes to make money. Now, that can happen locally if it were allowed by our macroeconomic system, but it's not. So it would be wonderful if local governments could issue the money because that's where the need is. That's where it's closest, right? And so it should just be able to create the money it needs right there in a distributed system, right? A distributed network.
He asked about public banks, too.
And public banks, how does that hook? That can work also, same problem, because they have they're up against a big system that doesn't want... and they don't get any power. It's like it's a revolution where you don't get any power, you know, because the money authority will remain in those private banking systems. The public bank can help in a lot of ways, you know. It can help communities, no doubt, and fine, do that. But remember that we need to change the system, and because operating within that system is just causing damage.
Right, and can I just add to that? Because one of the way the NEED Act is designed in such a way that the money will be going into the local communities, state and local communities, mm-hmm. Once you understand the way the bill is written.
Yeah. NEED Act?
Yeah. Yes. Which is
HR 2990.
Yeah, and private public debt. The difference between
what the NEED Act does is break up the banking system that we have today that is allowed to control money. There will still be a debt. It's just that we won't have a debt dominant system. We will have a way to pay it off because there's going to be enough money, public money, put into the system.
There's
keep
a graph
that,
that I had there that I had in here, and it showed.
Comes due, and the same with state and local government debt as well.
Gotcha.
Because it'll be replaced by an interest-free facility from a revolving fund at the Federal Reserve to distribute out to the state and local governments. And the whole NEED Act, everything is done on a per capita basis with some allowances for different cost differences in different regions of the country. In some places some things cost more than other places because of transportation there. So it's all it all filters down to a per capita basis.
Instead of getting stuck up in those big banks.
Yes, at the back.
I have a comment. Is it that patriarchy created money as a tool, or is it that money created patriarchy? Because I feel like those things are intimately entwined.
I think so too, and I think it was happened kind of at the same time. It was a mechanism to do it. At the very same time, right? That was the way. Right, it was the way.
Yes, at the front.
Would you comment?
I was referring to the woman at the front here.
I don't have any, but does Bitcoin fit into this world in any way? I know there's supposed to be all kinds of...
Blockchain technology does. It can.
It can, but I have some problems with that.
There's some issues right now. We have to have a democracy first.
And that would allow Bitcoin to continue, or a Bitcoin would be erased with the bank?
I think they would go, because that's mm-hmm. just a
I do too, because
investment scheme.
Right, and exactly. It's an investment scheme. You should never have to pay for money, ever. Money is the mechanism for an exchange of real products. So that's one of the things that I was supposed to mention was this organization that Sue and I have gotten a little bit involved with, and the AMI has worked with them before, Randy Cook and Charles Walters, who created Acres USA, if you've ever heard of that. He used to be president of NORM, the NORM organization. He was an economist, and they have something known as Parity for Agriculture. Which most of us kind of forget about agriculture, why we have to pay the farmers a livable wage. We don't even think about that. We think, oh, they're, a bunch of rich ranchers or, they own thousands of acres. And if you're a small farmer, that's really pretty far from the truth. And there is a formula that's been mathematically proven from biblical times forward that there is a relationship between what the raw materials producers are paid, particularly in agriculture, and the national income. And it's if you don't start with that first segment, paying them fairly, every other rung in the sector in the economy, the wage earners and all of that are going to suffer, and so will national income. So there is a whole formula. We've got some flyers, so you can take a look at them. There's one thing I think that's especially interesting for the people here, and that's called that they have got, and it's called trade equity. So we have a lot of stuff about these free trade agreements, which are anything but free trade, and they have been used historically as one way to destroy an internal domestic economy, and that's what the NEED Act really is going to do: is help rebuild local economies, which is why it's important to agriculture. But their trade equity formula they have created a system where they'll instead of writing all these rules, by lawyers and agribusiness people for how trade is going to be conducted, they're going to have a exchange fund where it's going to balance out the prices. Instead of right now, manufacturers and all these other people want to go to where the food is the cheapest, the shoes are the cheapest, and they're going to be instead creating a fund that says if you want to go overseas, you're going to have to pay the producer here. It takes him $5 or whatever to produce a bushel of wheat or a computer, say a $10 computer. You can buy it here or you can buy it in China for $5. If you buy it in China for $5, you're going to have to add $5 to this fund. And you can use it to then to buy China can then use it to buy a $10 computer here. So
the end result is instead of our standard of living being brought down to very low levels, we're going to keep our standard of living, and this fund will help the other countries come up to our standard of
and the idea,
which is what we all want.
Yes, and the idea is trade. This free trade has always been used to ruin domestic economies. Anyway, we'll be handing out these just so you can become acquainted with the concept. A lot of it's embedded in the NEED Act.
Back to monetary reform.
NEED Act.
NEED Act. Dennis Kucinich introduced it in 2011. H.R. 2990. And it was based on work done by the American Monetary Institute. Charles Walters and Randy Cook of NORM were part of those groups that were bringing formulating the model that the NEED Act is based on.
Ben Dyson of Positive Money, not exactly.
Google HR 2990. 2011.
Yeah, SB 2011. Yeah. There's lots of other bills called HR 2990 from other congresses. And so
oh, yeah.
So right here.
It has to be from 2011. Yeah. Or the National Emergency Employment Defense Act.
Yes.
And it's on the homepage of the AMI website.
Right. I just wanted to say one example that people... our neighbors, the Canadians, from 1938 to 1974, they had a public central bank, which gave them many, many things, their higher education free, all of that stuff. What happened is, but they didn't take the power away to create debt money from their private banks. So in 1974, the Treasurer of Canada went to the Bank for International Settlements. They had a meeting there. We don't know what went on, but he came back and he went to the Bank of Canada and he said, you're not to give any more of your money out to Canadians at any level. And that stopped it.
And
from 1974, the debt of the Canadian government went from here to this.
Yeah. And I can speak
we
to
don't
that.
Want that to happen here. We have to have all three.
It has happened here.
Totally.
Yes. I'll just say, as a Canadian here, coming from, as she said, we have the only public central bank in the G8. In the short time that I have, I'll just say that the group that I'm with, the Committee on Monetary and Economic Reform, COMER, actually took the Bank of Canada to the Supreme Court, saying because on the books, the legislation is such that the government, the central bank, should be allowed to monetary finance infrastructure projects, capital, human capital projects. I mean, if you look at our infrastructure in terms of the Trans-Canada Highway, the national healthcare system that is the envy of Americans, and so many other projects that were massively expensive, that was made possible not from borrowing from commercial banks, not by increasing taxes, but by the central bank, our Bank of Canada, providing monetary financing that was government issued and interest free. We did not increase our national debt during that time. We did not increase inflation during that time. And so we actually have in our history, Canadian history, that this can be done and very, very successfully. And there's no reason why we can't do it either in Canada or elsewhere.
I think Minnesota shenanigans, so, would Canada be the 11th province?
Pardon me?
I think Minnesota should annex Canada.
Canada is going downhill, though.
So I will say, please visit our table. There's a lot more information, particularly about the NEED Act, if you have, if you are more curious. We also have a conference coming up next month in Chicago in September. If you want to continue dialoguing with us and partnering about how we can work together on pushing both of our issues forward. So thank you.
Come to our conference.
We've got some flyers here about the conference if you want, and a bit more background information.
You get a,
so just at the front here.
There's a discount for conference goers. They're going around. They're all gone. Oh, I could hand these out. I think they were over here.
The solution with all this
Tim? Tim? I'm writing this on the board.
Your butt was in the way.
Your butt may be smaller, but it was in the way.